This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. I am ready for another great episode today because we are going to be talking to someone who has one of those job titles that I think so many of us wanted when we were growing up. This is going to be fun.
Well, now I'm curious, what problem are we solving today?
How do you keep zoo animals happy?
How do you keep zoo animals happy? This sounds amazing. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Today, our guest is Miss Susan Summers, who was a zookeeper. Tell me you didn't want to be a zookeeper when you were growing up, Jennifer.
Oh, this is so cool. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so excited because I have loved going to the zoo since I was a kid, probably like most people out there. But my first question is, you know, did you always want to be a zookeeper?
You know, I got into it by sheer luck, but I always was a nature enthusiast. I was always outside collecting bugs and turtles and snakes, and my mother was not happy about that when the eggs hatched. The eggs hatched in the other room, and she realize that. Yes, so I have been interested. I was the classic tomboy, as the word was at the time, and I found my first experience at the Ecotarium, which was the Worcester Science Center, as a naturalist, and got sucked in and stayed there as long as I could before they let me go. So, yeah, it was
the Ecotarium is where I became Galactic Space Geek Jeff. I actually grew up a mile and a half from there, spent a whole lot of my kid and teenage years visiting there. And because I won an essay contest in high school, my high school shared a property fence with the Ecotarium. With my astrophysics essay, I got an internship with the astronomer who ran the planetarium, the observatory, and was in charge of all of the science experiments on the inside of the building. So while I was still in high school, I got to run the planetarium at the Ecotarium.
Oh,
so I love that place. And man, they had some very cool animals. So I've got to ask, while you were there, what were some of your favorite animals and animal exhibits at the Ecotarium?
Oh. Well, my favorite was the polar bears. At the time, it was Ursa Major and Ursa Minor.
I love polar bears.
How could it not be?
Yes. We used to get to use fire hoses to clean their exhibits, which was really cool.
Wow.
We used to make, you know, their food that we got. We had wet food and dry food. And some days when we had their wet food, we would make them into little meatballs and let them stand up. And we would throw them over the side so that they could catch them.
No way.
Yeah, it was very cool. I love my job. We had a parrot that, you know, I really enjoyed. He was a scarlet macaw, but he was naughty because at some point, some school children, you know, I don't know what age they were, taught him how to swear under his breath. If you were really quiet, you could hear him swear at people, but he had a great personality.
I can't imagine school kids doing that.
No, never.
So tell me more about this Ecotarium. So it had animals, like live animals, and then it had a planetarium too. So did you get to do all of these different things, Susan?
You know, I was focused only on animal care stuff because they had outdoor exhibits with animals and they had indoor exhibits with animals. And so when I was there, I would volunteer through the naturalist program after school. Again, I was at the same time Jeff was there. as a high school student. I was there as a high school student, although his years were different than mine. So I would go after school and I would help them clean, you know, and feed and make sure that things were ready for the next day if we were preparing diets and stuff. We would help on the weekends with the trails and clean and feed the animals out on the trails. So we, you know, we were always busy doing some kind of activity to make sure that they were, you know, taken care of. But they did have a train that was, and it's still there, that you can ride. And we used to love hollering as we went through the tunnel, as everybody does.
Yes, the Ecotarium, it really is hard to describe because it is combination zoo, science center, space center, activity center. There is the train, which just kind of is its own version of awesomeness because it rides around the entire property. On the train, when they had polar bears, you used to ride the train right by the polar bear exhibit, which was just cool. It was a great place. It is still there, still going, which is wonderful. I actually made a copy or an issue of my kids' magazine about it. They have just come out of what they called for COVID. They called it hibernation for the entire museum being closed. I thought that was very cool. And they don't actually have polar bears anymore, but that exhibit has now been converted and they have two beautiful mountain lions there. So being a zookeeper, you know, we all visited the zoo, regardless of whether or not you were like the super animal kid or a tomboy or whatever. Everybody went to the zoo. Everybody's family went to the zoo. What is your best, whether it was the Ecotarium or somewhere else, what's one of your best behind-the-scenes stories about being a zookeeper?
Let's see. I have a couple. One of the days, now, I don't know if they still have this. There was a window when we were making diets for feeding for later. You used to be able to walk and watch the keepers work. So there was a glass window and you could see them cleaning, you know, dishes and cutting up things for animals to have for dinner.
Sure.
And at one point, we were cleaning inside that room an exhibit that had housed flying squirrels. And I was opening it to put them into a safe spot so that I could clean their exhibit. But, you know, why I chose to wear a dress that day, I have no idea. I think I came from school. Oh, yeah, you know where this is going.
Here it comes.
And so I'm standing there doing my thing, and this little flying squirrel managed to get out of my hand, crawled right under my dress. And before I realized it, I went to reach for him and I'm in front of the window and I almost flung my skirt up to pick the thing up. And then I realized, oh, I can't do this here. So I had to run to the back room as I'm, you know, dancing with this little creature crawling around, you know, and he was safely put back where he belonged. But, you know, it was one of those experiences that I just laughed because I think, oh, my God, if anyone was looking through that window, maybe a 10-year-old, maybe he saw that. That was, you know, one of my experiences. I just laughed because
the whole different exhibit at the zoo that day.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It was.
So you got to feed them and clean their cages. So how do you keep zoo animals happy, though? Do you have games that they do? Or, you know, are there things that you engage them with?
Well, you know, just like you and I, every animal has a personality. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they like to be social. Sometimes they like to be solitary. So you have to keep in mind, you got to do a little research to figure out what they would be like out in the wild. So there are things that you could do, like, you know, for polar bears, you could put big blocks of ice into their pool so that they can play with them, so it engages them. It's called enrichment. And so in other places that I have worked, we have taken pumpkins and put snacks inside them and hidden them where the wolves and the coyotes can dig, you know. When we've cut tree limbs, you know, the beaver, the porcupine, they need to chew. So we would give them things that they could chew on because that's a natural activity that they would be, you know, doing. Sure. Animals that are flighted, if they were used for programs, you know, they might be housed indoors, but we would want them to go outside in an enclosed area where they could hear, you know, other wildlife. And if they could fly, we'd give them a chance to fly around an area, or if they were injured, they could fly in little spots and hop up on different perches so they could just get their enrichment and not be, you know, stuck in this little zone. Because like you and I, there are times when you want to be by yourself, but there are times that you need that experience from other things. And, you know, and sometimes when you're getting animals that maybe you had one in another museum said, you know, we have this other animal we would like to exchange because we don't have enough space. You put them together, they're not always going to be best friends, you know. So you got to make sure that you give them time to get to know each other and see how they relate, because sometimes they don't.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, we all understand that because we don't always get along with everybody all the time.
Right. Okay. So I'm thinking back to my time at the Ecotarium, and I remember they had lots of different animals, all the way from insects straight through birds and snakes and to the porcupine, all the way up to the bigger animals like the polar bears.
Yeah.
But they brought certain animals out to let the kids touch or hold. As a zookeeper, are there certain animals that can do that? Like, you just started that last explanation with every animal has their own personality. Mm-hmm. So do zookeepers and do you guys pick specific animals to be those ones that are interacting?
Yes. So I transitioned from a keeper to an environmental educator. And in different facilities, you know, any zoo or museum that you know of, they have their animals that are used for classes and then those that are on exhibit and they're not exchangeable because of their personalities. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, you know, snakes, not that everyone loves to see a snake, but snakes, you know, that are comfortable being handled, we would take those out for people to learn about, you know, and get them to touch them, learn how to touch them the proper way and not be afraid of them. We would use opossums, you know, people don't know a lot about opossums in their natural environment. So we would take them out and show them these animals. And a lot of times the mammals and some of the birds as well, the mammals like the opossums, maybe a skunk, perhaps a rabbit, were animals that might be orphaned. You know that you'll see orphaned young opossums because moms get hit sometimes on the road and sometimes they're carrying babies at the same time. So they might get rehabilitated. But at that point, it's a time that if we could get them, we could teach them that people, you know, can handle them safely and bring them to classes so kids could learn a little bit about them. Same with young skunks, although we would take them to the vet first so that way that we wouldn't have any kind of issues with the skunks in a program. Some of the birds that we got might have been imprinted, and so therefore that meant that they would rely on people for their food. So then they couldn't be released because they would never be able to survive on their own.
Right.
So we could use, you know, birds like that. Sometimes an owl that got injured had one eye that was functioning, the other one wasn't. So it was a bunch of different animals that, depending on their personal, you know, experiences, were usable for programs and were able to feel comfortable in front of children. And we had to practice with them and teach them, you know, that it was safe and that, you know, even though kids might get a little squirmy, we weren't going to let them get hurt. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a question because I mean, I've seen, you know, you've been at the zoo sometimes, especially if you're there in the morning and you see them feeding the animals. So, you know, for the small squirrel, you could pick it up, which I'm guessing you're taught how to handle the animal properly and carefully. Correct. So you don't injure yourself or the animal.
Correct.
But what do you do with like big cats and, you know, bigger animals? Do you have, I'm assuming you have to get them out of the enclosure before you go in there to clean. How do you do that? Do you train them to do this or?
Yes. And so in most places in the evening, there are different doors for the exhibits. So there's the place that the public get to see. And then behind that space is often a door to like a safe house, which is their evening place that they go to sleep. And so when you go to, you know, in the evening, you bring the food in, the different bedding materials, the fresh water, whatever they're going to be needing for the night. You open the door, you know, and they know it's food time, essentially. So they'll wander in.
So the food is in the safe room.
Yeah.
Okay.
You close the door. And then while they're in that space, secure and safe, you clean the exhibit that they just left. So you are not interacting with them.
That's a late night though, sometimes, right? Because sometimes zoos,
well, it depends on the time, you know, the time.
Yeah, but if the zoo closes at like 5 or 6, then you're cleaning cages. Yeah.
Or you're doing that first thing in the morning before you let them out. So then when the morning comes, you clean the exhibit that they're going to be going to, let them out, you know, and you might put in their exhibit some fun things that they can search for, you know, fine, and then clean their night, you know, exhibit is the night area where they might have slept and pooped, and you know, you want to make sure that they're coming back later to a clean space. So you make sure you transition them from one safe area to the other so that they don't get injured and you don't get injured, because, you know, sometimes, as you have heard on the news, those things can happen, you know, if people are distracted and stuff. So,
I mean, they are wild animals, right? Like,
yeah, yes. And they're, you know, they know, for the most part, they know the keepers, they know the people that see them on a daily basis. And so if there's new people around, then they may not trust them. So, you know, you're always, if you're going to be working with them, you're being trained by someone they know and respect, right, and will treat them well. But yeah, you always have to be careful. You know, and some animals do know you and react to you differently. And once they get to know you, you know, and it seems like they're more, as if they'd be more like a pet, but they're really not. You still have to know that, yes, they show their affection, they show their interest in you, but you also have to be aware of that.
It's a polar bear, and its hand is probably bigger than your head.
Yeah. We never played with him. I never played with him.
Right.
But yeah. So there are some animals that, you know, show more affection. Like I used to be able to, we had some wolves, some timber wolves that were there, that their names were Fang and Sheba, and they were beautiful. And if you were there, you know, and you finished cleaning their enclosure and feeding them, they might lean up to the fence and could be able to scratch them, you know, like a dog. However, I never took that for granted because, you know, they still have sharp teeth and stuff. So even though they were used to us and they were, you know, we were respectful of them and, you know, we had a rapport, you never take that for granted because sometimes everybody has a bad day, even an animal.
Sure. We're learning now with you about how we keep zoo animals happy and how you, zookeeper and zoo staff, keep animals happy at the zoo. As a zookeeper, what would you want to tell kids and families? Because they're the ones that are going to visit at the zoo. What would you want to tell all of our listeners about how they visit the zoo to make it maybe a better experience for the kids and the families and the animals?
Oh, gosh. There's a lot I could add to that. Well, you know, like sometimes people think that, and I think you know this from other shows and things, banging on the glass is a way to get an animal to get up and look at you. Mm-hmm. They've seen and heard that a billion times if they're in, you know, an enclosure and they're not going to move. If you're outside walking a trail and you're whistling and you're yelling and you're, you know, making noises, you know, the coyotes heard it, the mountain lions have heard it, the bobcats heard it. And they're just going to look at you and they're not going to get up and go, oh, hey, you know, because they know everybody tries that. So doing that is not going to make a difference.
Okay.
I would recommend, you know, depending on the time of year, there are times when they're more active, you know, if the weather's cooler, they might have more fun a day after it snowed, or the, you know, first thing in the morning when they're just getting up and they're running around their enclosure, because they're excited to be there. So, you know, things that people think would help engage them won't, because they have their own way of doing things. And, you know, the best thing is maybe to sit and just watch, you know, and just wait and not be in a hurry to get them to do anything. And, you know, if anybody has pets, they know they're not always going to do what you want all the time. You know, they have a day they just want to sleep. They have a day that they're not feeling well. So, you know, you just got to pay attention to those things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that, you know, because we live in Florida. So taking the kids to the zoo on the really hot days, it was very difficult to find the animals. Or if you find them, they're definitely sleeping and not moving around. So we always tried to go in the morning. It didn't always work, right? Like you said, some sleep late, right? Or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, but we did try to go in the morning, but we would do that with the kids too. And the other thing I would say is usually a lot of zoos have amazing information on the walls.
Yes.
I was the one that always sat there and read that. I thought that was so cool. And I always learned so much more about the animals.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. You know, I mean, and they do, to make those exhibits, to write that stuff, people do a lot of research to make sure that that information is in a way that people can read it and understand it and enjoy it versus reading a textbook and having a quiz later on. You know, it's a completely different way to make signage. And yeah, you want to have a good time and you want people to learn about the animals too and like them. Because for me, you know, some people are anti-zoo and I understand that, but for kids to get involved in helping animals around the world, the ones that they like the best, they think are really cool. It could be the turtle. It could be the tarantula. It could be the elephant. It doesn't matter. Your thing is your thing. But until they see them up close and learn a bit about them, they're not going to make that connection. And so to have a zoo or museum, an aquarium that has those things that they can actually watch and engage with is priceless, I think.
Yeah.
I agree. I like to call it the wow factor.
Yeah.
And until you see an elephant up close, you know, a baboon up close. One of my favorites at the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo here in Colorado Springs, which is voted best zoo in the country a lot or top 10, is the rhino. It's just, it's so big. But then once it gets in the water, it's like a fish.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see such a big, slow animal on land just jump in the water and be so much more adept and comfortable than when you see a human being go swimming. So there is such a wow factor when you get that close to the animals.
I agree. And, you know, and you get to see them do things that you might not, you know, how they scratch, how they walk, how they poop, you know, things that kids get, you know, find hilarious. You know, I worked at a place where there was a cow that doesn't really like people. You know, we would feed her and we would bring her water, and she wasn't really always pleasant. And she would take her water bowl and put it on her head and fling it out at people because I do not want to see anybody today. So, you know, that's something that animals have tempers too. And yeah, we had to refill that water bowl a lot, but. I think it's just fun. And I know that I have met kids that they are like, we just want to see the raccoon that they decided to give a name to, you know, we're going to call him this and we're going to go see this raccoon every day. And I think that's really cool because, you know, people have their affection for certain animals and, you know, every zoo, museum, aquarium relies on those kids to help send information to their families, their friends about the environment, to maybe offer to do a project with their class, with their scout group, you know, with their church, whatever, to help out in any little way they can. And that is a huge thing. And it's greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Well, now, so the other thing that I want to ask you about is I know the vets check on the animals. I don't know if it's daily or how often, but when I was at the Atlanta Zoo, I did a panda bear encounter, which was really cool. I mean, of course, you don't ever touch the panda. Yeah. But
did
we got
the panda food.
We fed the panda. We fed the panda bamboo. It was very cool. I mean, you know, you're still 6 feet away, you know, and it's very, very safe. And there's a keeper like right next to you.
Yeah.
But doing a program like that also helps support the zoo.
Yes.
Right. And it makes you like really, because they took us behind the scenes and they showed us, like you were saying, the different safe places. And then there's like, you know, a tunnel kind of that took them down here. And then they train them to go into this certain place. And then when the vet comes out, they train them to like get their, you know, hand them their arm. So, you know, how often do the vets come and check on the animals? Are they there? Do they have vets on staff? And
you know, some places do have vets on staff that are there to just, you know, keep an eye on what's going on. They also rely on the keepers, also, you know, the education staff who work with certain animals to keep an eye on behaviors. You know, if this animal is known for doing this one thing regularly, and then all of a sudden his behavior changes, you know, something's not right. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not feeling well. Or, you know, if he's eating a lot more or a lot less than he used to, or as we know, when we get sick, did they throw up? Is their poo a little different? You know, all right. of these things are monitored. And every day the keepers make notes of that in a book.
Oh, wow.
You know, he ate this much. He did this much. We cleaned this much, you know. So that way, if any changes occur, they know, you know, maybe it's because maybe with the panda bear, they're ovulating. And we know that if they're doing this at this time, you know, this is going on.
Right.
Something else. So there's always, you know, the bat ate 6 mealworms instead of 5 today. Everything is monitored so that way they can keep everybody happy with their diet, with their exercise, you know, with everything. And they always are reassessing what's going on to make sure that
right.
everything is, you know, in the standard that they want and the animals are happy and healthy. And in captivity, animals can live. You know, one of the polar bears that I was telling you about, Ernst & Major, he lived like 35 years.
Wow.
That's a long time to be taken care of. Turtles, you know, if they're well taken care of, 100.
Wow.
You know, parrots,
wow.
parrots 65. Like, you can keep them for a long time, and you need to make sure that you're not in it for just because they're cool. You need to make sure you are willing to take care of them forever and ever. Amen, is what I tell the kids. Like, if you want to get a turtle as a pet, you can't just decide, oh, I'm done with this, and I'm just going to let them go.
Right.
That's not really like, how would you feel if your mom did that to you? Yeah, we had enough of you today. See ya. You have to make sure that you put in the effort, or, you know, it's a hard job and it takes a lot of effort, but there's a lot of reward in it. You know?
Sure. Yeah. And scientists yeah. sure love our data and our information. And
yes.
Susan, this has been absolutely fantastic. I could keep asking you questions about every critter at the zoo. But we do have a limit on how long our listeners will listen to us. We do like to ask our guests if they have a challenge for our listeners. So I'm interested to hear what you have.
Oh, I do. So, you know, one of the things that when you are getting an animal for an enclosure, large, small, doesn't matter, you have to put in the homework to decide what makes an enclosure a good enclosure. What, okay. you know, plants are safe for them. What plants are not safe for them? Do they like warm rocks? Do they like cold rocks? Do they like water? Do sure. they not like water? So my challenge would be, how would you design an exhibit?
Ooh.
For two different animals. And here's, you know, one, what's your favorite animal? Who would you design one for? You know,
okay.
Who's the one you hate? What animal are you afraid of that you don't like? You have to put the same amount of love and devotion into that guy as the other guy, because
oh,
just because you might not like the spider, the tarantula. Like, when I first met a tarantula, I was really, really nervous.
Yeah, no.
But now I would be happy to put one up. I have no problem with it.
Okay.
But, you know.
You're way better than me. I'm like, uh-huh.
I was going to say, I wish all of our listeners uh-huh. could see Jennifer's face right now.
No, no. In fact, I used to, like, my husband, when, you know, he used to take the kids into the reptile house and I would just sit outside because I was like, you know, yeah, I wasn't a fan. I was just like, you know, not a fan.
We're not the only one. Because when we did classes and when the snake would come out, we would know, because all of the teachers that didn't like them would be in the hallway. And then we would open the door and go, okay, he's been put away. You can come back in, you know, so we would know. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of our friends, kid, when they were kids, they had, you know, you can occasionally have birthday parties where they bring some yes. animals, and they brought this gigantic boa, and it was
yeah.
yellow. And yeah. my husband was, you could just see him. He was like, can I try? And so we have a picture of him holding this thing and he's like walking towards me. And I'm like, No. You just stay right over there. I'm like, I'll touch it. I'll put my finger up. I'm just, I have a healthy respect. Their yeah. snakes are beautiful animals. I am not interested in being close to them.
You know? And that's okay, because my mom did not like birds. She was petrified of birds. And so, you know, I don't think she minded when I brought a snake home, the woodchuck home.
There you go.
You know, but she did not care for the birds in the house. So yeah,
no,
everybody's got their thing.
A koala bear, I could stare at all day. I love koala bears. I'd love to hold one, but I understand that they are very, very sharp claws and are not yes. thrilled with yes. humans. So
nope.
I can just stare at them from afar. Right.
I had a friend who actually got to fly one from her zoo all the way across the country to the San Diego Zoo. And he was her seatmate in the airplane.
No way. Yeah.
In his own little enclosure, you know, his own little container. But
oh my gosh, that would be very cool. Okay. Well, this is
to the airport to pick up animals, bees, beaver, different things, alligators, you name it, you know. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's cool too. Well, this has been an awesome episode. I really love learning all about zoology and being a zookeeper. So thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Susan.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. And if anybody has questions, you know, send me an email. I'll do my best to answer them for you.
Yep. You can contact us through our website. You can send us an email right there on solveitforkids.com.
Cool.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
You're welcome. Take care.
Wow, that was fun. I could absolutely talk to Susan the zookeeper. Like, I could go exhibit by exhibit from the crickets and the worms through the tarantulas and spiders, through the penguins, through the water animals and the land animals. We might have to have her back, because tell me animal stories aren't the coolest stories.
They are. And you know, the thing I think about is, of course, it all brings us back to our childhood. I mean, most of us went to zoos as kids. And then as you grow up and you become a parent, you might take your kids to the zoos, which we did all the time. Jacksonville, Florida, where I live, has an amazing zoo. We watched it grow hugely over the years. I remember when the giraffes came and they could feed the giraffes. I mean, you have such a great connection with nature and you learn so much, you know, like Susan was saying, about taking care of the environment. So these are really important things. She did a great job on the show. I hope everybody goes to our website, solveforkids.com. We'll have some pictures of animals maybe that Susan worked with. We'll have information about the Ecotarium. Is that how you say that?
That is correct.
Right. And then leave us some information. Leave us a comment maybe about the zoo where you live so that we can take a look and see, you know, what's going on over there.
And be sure to reach out to us on our social media at KidsSolved, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We would love to know about how you would design an exhibit for the animal that you love and the one that is your least favorite at the zoo. I love that she added that. So we will talk to you next time on Solve It for Kids.